Hello everyone, welcome to Slightly Something Else. I'm Jacek Kruszel, and joined as always by Marty Sleaver.
Hello everyone.
And this week we are talking about tutorials. Relevantly,
yeah.
Because that's about as far as I've gotten in Zelda so far, but that's okay, I've got all week to play it.
There you go.
Because happily I can do a review of Darkest Dungeon 2 in the meantime. But anyway.
Ooh. Look at that, little teases of what's coming up on ZP.
So this was your topic. Why specifically did Zelda Tears of the Kingdom make you think of tutorials and how things could be better?
So a point of comparison with a lot of people very early on in Tears of the Kingdom has been comparing sort of those Great Sky Islands, which is the tutorial area in Tears of the Kingdom, to the Great Plateau, which is the tutorial area in Breath of the Wild. And
I had very similar thoughts, you know, because I started Tears of the Kingdom, and the forefront of mind was Breath of the Wild started so well. Mm-hmm. You're in a coffin, you get out, you're in a cave, you get to the end of the cave, and there's a whole world. It's a classic example of what I used to call the unfolding approach to establishing your game. You start off in a small space, you unfold, you double that space, you double it again, and you double it again. And
that
moment when you go out into the cave and see the whole world that you're all along, you were part of this gigantic world, beautifully done. In comparison, Tears of the Kingdom starts with walk and talk. And I hate walk and talk. Maybe I'll do an extra punctuation one of these days on walk and talk, because it really is a very annoying habit a lot of games have.
Aaron Sorkin presents Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's shocking how Tears of the Kingdom starts kind of the exact opposite of like you mentioned Breath of the Wild, where Breath of the Wild is all about, you know, you have to complete the first couple shrines in the Great Plateau, but it is so expansive, and it is like, here is the world, it is your oyster, go do what you want. And then Tears of the Kingdom starts, and you're just going on a little cave date with your girlfriend.
Yeah, she's just blathering on about some bullshit. Reminds me
of
going shopping.
It's very important to the timeline.
It's like going shopping with the wife. And he's just thinking, God, is she gonna pick on a fucking bra one of these days?
But so that sort of got me thinking about gaming history and what we think of as a good tutorial. What does a game need to do to give us a good tutorial? And then what are some examples of bad tutorials that for one reason or another kind of just stumble under their own weight? Or maybe even like one thing, when I'm playing Tears of the Kingdom, it's a weird thing in the tutorial, I'm thinking, man, is this going to be a slog to replay when I inevitably replay this game in a couple of years? Because like, I really like blasting through the Great Plateau on replays, whereas this, I'm like, ooh, this is going to take a couple hours, I think.
You know, I think people who know me well are going to anticipate what I'm about to bring up, because of course I have a lot of nostalgia for the late 90s and early 2000s era of PC shooters.
Are you gonna bring up Half-Life?
That was a wonderful time for tutorials, because the tutorials would inevitably be this entire separate thing that you could play instead of starting the game. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to say Half-Life was the very first game to do that with its hazard course.
Casey did not play. We did not know that was a thing when we were playing.
Well, it might have helped you learn how to fucking long jump at the end of the game. yes, but that way you could learn all the mechanics before actually getting into the actual plot, which I guess made sense to a lot of developers at the time, because oftentimes it's hard to know how to work a tutorial into a game, especially if you're going for a strong narrative.
Yeah. Do you weave it into the actual like plot and story, or do you keep it as a completely separate pillar that a player can choose to engage with or choose not to engage with?
These days, it's absolutely common practice to work it into the game. Inevitably, there's the bit at the start of the game where, oh, we're in a corridor, press such and such to sprint. Oh, a bit of ceiling has fallen down to about just under head height. Press control to crouch. I remember reading a review of Gunman Chronicles, which was like a fan-made total conversion for Half-Life. And I remember the review like waxing lyrical about how the tutorial is worked into the opening events of the plot. And it had that, because that was the first time anyone had seen that.
Yeah. Whereas now that just seems like old hat.
Yeah, everyone does that now. I mean,
Would you rather have it be a separate? Would you rather have it be a thing you opt into, or
I'm a little torn because, you know, obviously video gamers have low attention spans. At least that seems to be the operating principle behind the design of games these days. That's why they always start with these cold opens, where there's usually an action sequence to get you like hooked. I guess PC shooters had the advantage of the slightly more captive audience of PC gamers. Which, without wishing to lie rip on anything and any specific demographics, tended to be slightly more cerebral PC gamers generally back in the day. That's why the first PC games were like adventure games and strategy games and stuff.
If you could figure out how to use a PC, you could probably figure out the mechanics of the game.
Yeah, and the tutorial was just perfectly fine for those sorts of people who are already sort of used to being in a sort of didactic position. And often these games would take full advantage of it by incorporating a lot of world building into the tutorial. I think Deus Ex did that extremely well.
Yeah.
But as I say, in an environment where the console gamers are sort of merged with the PC gamers, as was happened like from like the 2000s onwards, the issue of gaming attention spans became more and more of a thing. And so the tutorial level was kind of dropped as a concept.
It's also a designer has to think about, like, who is playing their game. Is this a person who is a seasoned veteran of the series and so will understand most of the core mechanics and just need to learn the new ones? Is this a casual player who might have forgotten the last game? Or is this someone who's coming to the franchise fresh? And so they have to think of, like, how much of this language do they need to teach the player? Is, like, is this Spanish 101 or is this more advanced Spanish? Does this person come in with a couple of years of knowledge under their belt? And so that's always an interesting thing to me as games, as the gaming audience, especially with an example like a Switch game like Zelda, which, you know, is going to sell dozens of millions of copies. How do you create a sort of an accordion of tutorial that is able to cater to hardcore fans and newbies alike?
I guess short of just having a little pop-up saying, do you need a tutorial? Yes, stroke, no.
Sure, yeah.
There are sort of things you can do. I guess you could, if you want to go like really hardcore in it, you could try to sort of gauge the player's actions. Like if they seem to be acting with confidence, you could sort of skip the tutorial, or at least make it pretty obvious, although not too obvious, that they could just walk straight past the tutorial and not bother. I think Elden Ring did that. Sort of.
There's a bunch of like notes on the ground and you can read the notes. You can sort of go along their path or you can choose to just kind of book it. Souls games in general are pretty good at, if you feel like you're confident with the mechanics, you could just run past. Like the Undead Asylum is a place I've already seen chat talking about and a lot of folks bring up
example. Dark Souls was really bad at tutorializing. Like I would never have figured out how to summon other players to help me in boss fights, or summon NPCs to help me in boss fights, if I hadn't like learned from a third party. Because first you got to go talk to Solaire and get the white soapstone for him. And the game also doesn't mention you have to be alive to be able to summon things. You can't be a hollow. And I spent most of my time as a hollow because, you know, I'm a new player, I die a lot, and I don't want to waste like precious items restoring myself to humanity all the bloody time.
Yeah, it's funny, and that's almost by hardcore fans of the Souls games, that's almost heralded as like that's a feature, not a bug. Like they are supposed to be opaque with their systems and mechanics.
I sort of came to understand that to a certain extent, Dark Souls intended to be experienced as a community, like very clearly given away by the ability to drop notes for people.
Sure.
I think a lot of people misunderstand that when it comes to imitating the Souls-like format.
Yeah. Also, I just wanted to really quickly say thank you. I see everyone sending in super chats and donations and everything. We really appreciate those. Obviously, the way this show works is we will go over all of those in the back half. So please get your thoughts in.
Getting back to the Hazard Core stroke separate tutorial thing, the issue with that is that it's a lot easier to get like tutorialized knowledge to stick if it's done in an active scenario, as it were.
Yeah.
I mean, you experienced that by encountering the long jump mechanic in the original Half-Life, because you learn that at the end of the Hazard course, and then it never comes up until the very, 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 very end of the game.
And that's the thing, is it's kind of stupid for a developer to teach you something when you're not going to use it immediately. Like, don't teach me something and then make me wait hours, several play sessions, a long time before I need to actually pull that back up, because God knows I'm probably not going to remember it.
It's the classic formula for tutorializing something. You present the problem, present the solution, and then you enforce the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Like first time, tell them directly how to do it, and then next time, do it immediately again, but without walking them through the whole process. That's the classic method.
Yeah, there's the other method too that I guess, for lack of a better term, I kind of use as like the cold open. So like how Indiana Jones or James Bond movies have a cold open, where it's kind of a scene that exists, like a mini adventure in and of itself, before like the real story starts.
Yeah, and a lot of video games will do the same. The original God of Wars, we're a big fan of doing that sort of thing.
Absolutely, kind of throwing you in media res. Super Metroid and Metroid Prime have their opening space stations before you get on the planets proper. Mega Man X's opening level, Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3 both have sort of those in the tanker, as well as the Virtuous mission in 3.
Mm.
And it almost feels like it is... You're learning the rules and the mechanics of the game in a smaller, safer setting before things really open up and you're really let off the leash to kind of kick the tires and see what you can find with.
Well, the other thing so many games do is the flash forward for the introductory tutorial thing.
Yeah.
Where you do like an action sequence from actually fairly late in the plot of the game.
Yep.
To like demonstrate the mechanics in a sort of very active situation.
Yeah.
Where you're making use of all the skills. Mm-hmm. And then wind back the clock, like throw up a big caption saying 3 days earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And then kick off with the actual game.
Yeah, Persona 5 obviously does that with the casino heist, with Joker getting captured. Uncharted 2 does that with climbing up the train and everything.
Yeah, I mean, sure, there are plenty of other examples. I mean, this was like a big trend in AAA for a while.
Yeah. Another kind of tutorial I think of is the one, maybe the best kind, is the one where we don't even realize we're being taught. And to me, I kind of think of that as like the way you get a kid to eat their vegetables by like smothering cheese sauce on it so they don't even realize.
Well, of course, that isn't always actionable. It depends on what sort of game you're making, I suppose.
I thought you were going to say, like, if your kid is lactose intolerant, you should...
I mean, you can't really throw them into the deep end with something like Crusader Kings 3.
No, so that is the tough thing of, like, how do you compare genres? Because there are certain genres that are just inherently more complex. And Crusader Kings, Civilization, you know, any 4X game, MMOs, like, they're things with layers upon layers that...
it's hard to know what like existing knowledge the players are working off, because you know something like Half-Life back in the day felt like it needed to take time to tutorialize how to move forwards and side to side, because you know that's the first thing you need to do. It would say press W key to move forward, press S key to move backwards, and I'd say most games don't feel they need to do that at this point. Even though I'm sure there are still plenty of people new to gaming who don't quite grasp the fundamental principle.
Yeah, there were still in like early console shooters. There was always the the way to figure out if you wanted inverted analog sticks or not by having an NPC tell your character, "Hey, look up at that sign," and whatever direction you hit the analog stick, that's how it's gonna. You know, it's either going to be inverted or not inverted. I think Halo did that in the past and stuff like that. That always feels like gets the job done, but it has like a inherent like inelegance to it compared to something like Portal. And I know we're harping on a lot of Valve games, but I think Valve are just particularly really fucking good at this.
Valve focus test like to oblivion.
Yeah.
That was like, I think a lot of people do that now, but they were like, that was their characteristic method. Even like very early on in the game's development, they'd have people in constantly trying out the build and like making everyone in the dev team watch them play.
And that's, I think, how you get a tutorial that works for, you know, if anyone knows how to, in a game like Portal, knows how to, you know, either operate a mouse and keyboard or a dual stick controller, then the tutorial feels very much it's very guided, but it's by like an invisible hand.
They focus test with more than just their video games, actually. Because when I was there in 2008, they sat me down and had me watch a very early draft of the Meet the Medic video, Team Fortress video.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they like grilled me on how much I'd figured it out. And turns out I'd completely misunderstood, so they had to like completely rethink the whole thing.
And that was, and you are someone who is obviously well versed in, games.
I was like a dumb 25-year-old at the time. So
yeah.
I had to factor that in.
Yeah, I was a dumb 25-year-old.
I'll tell you what. Because let's go to like good example, bad example.
Yeah.
Because when I was thinking of like bad examples of tutorials, one thing that leapt to mind was Doom Eternal.
Okay.
And what that, because the way that they always like introduce monsters is that you go in, the monster does its big show. A quick zoom into the face. And then it goes back to gameplay for you to fight it. And like the music's kicked in and you're all amped up for a battle. And then stop dead. Whole game freezes. Music is muted. Fucking pop-up comes up saying,
yeah,
this thing is a thing with a shield. Here are exact instructions on how to kill it. Yeah. Press OK when you feel like you're ready. And that really annoyed me because it's like instantly killed the pace. And that's the problem with trying to do tutorials in the middle of live gameplay, I suppose.
Yeah, and part of me thinks maybe they did have a more streamlined, kind of nuanced version of it, like in Doom 2016, in which its time to action is like 10 seconds. Mm. Like, you wake up in a coffin. A lot of games have you waking up in a coffin.
Yeah,
you hear a voice that tells you to rip and tear, and then you just start ripping and tearing.
It's the weird parallel between Breath of the Wild and Doom 2016, that both games open with the main character waking up in a sarcophagus.
Classic Miyamoto plays one Doom game and then is like, we got to scrap this. We got to have Naked Link wake up in a sarcophagus.
Post your examples of other games that start with coming out of a sarcophagus. System Shock 2, maybe?
Yeah, probably some mummy games probably have you just bouncing out of a sarcophagus.
System Shock 2 had a really good tutorial because it was framed as like you showing up at like the Army Recruitment Center and you'd go through like VR training and then then you like role-played your character's entire career. Like you go to different stations and say, where do you want to be posted for the next few years? And that would define what starting upgrades you had. And it was really immersive. So I remember really enjoying just playing through the tutorial before getting into the game.
So that idea of like living the life of your character is something that we see pop up in games. Fallout has done that. I think Fallout 4 starts with you kind of like, right, as like a baby, and then you're growing up inside of
even subtracting the hazard course, Half-Life does that, because you start off on like just on your train on the way to work.
Yeah, your commute to work. Yeah, exactly.
And everything's normal for a while. I think Half-Life was definitely the pioneer in that area. Like before then, shooters were just, you start off in a temple, here's the gun, shoot everything that isn't you. And it was Half-Life that sort of pioneered that approach to interactive narrative.
Yeah,
sort of realistic approach.
Yeah. And then even like, didn't Assassin's Creed 2 start with you like being born? Like
it literally starts with you being a baby.
Yeah.
And it sort of skips to you being 20 and already really good at parkour and climbing. So
yeah,
it's not quite the Fallout 3 experience.
No. Oh yeah, Fallout 3. Sorry, I think I said Fallout 4. I'm going to be honest, I don't know my Fallout games.
Fallout 4, another game that starts with you coming out of a sarcophagus.
That is true. That is true. What is a bunker if not a sarcophagus?
Arguably, yeah. A tech sarcophagus.
There you go. There's also like some other recent ones I think of where they do a good job of keeping you in a relatively confined space that is still a part of the overall world is something like Bioshock Infinite, where you learn sort of a lot of the small things by going through that opening, what is it, like a carnival or like a festival.
Yeah, that's also a really strong opening. I mean,
the
shifting moods of that intro make it very enjoyable. Like, you start off in the rain, in the sea, lost in the middle of nowhere, and then you get trapped by this machine, and it looks like things are going to shit, and then, boomf, you're above the clouds, and suddenly everything's really nice and sunny and wonderful. And then you'll get almost drowned by a preacher for some reason.
Sure.
And you wake up again, and it's nice again, and everything's lovely, it looks like Disneyland.
Yeah, exactly.
And then things continue in that mood for a while, and then, bam, hideous racism. And the game kicks off.
Disneyland.
I still think Bioshock is probably one of the strongest openings from a narrative perspective, but Bioshock Infinite's probably up there.
It's also everything you're saying in Bioshock Infinite. It's good on its own, but I feel like it's even better with Bioshock as a comparison point. Mm. Even the like subversion of expectations of getting to the lighthouse and instead of going down, you go up. You know, that very much feels like a kind of a statement of intent, or at the very least a foil to what happens in the original game.
Mm.
Another example in recent ish times, I guess, like 7 or 8 years ago, was The Witness, which teaches you its core connect the dots kind of mechanic in that small walled garden of an opening area. And it isn't until you leave that walled garden that literally the entire world is open to you. So
another great example of unfolding by the described.
It starts off
in a corridor.
Yeah.
Then you're in the walled garden and then you're in the overworld. Unfold, unfold, unfold.
Yeah. Whereas I see people talking about something like Minecraft. I think there's certain games that are almost just like the freedom I'm given at the start is too much. Mm. And I feel that with certain Bethesda games and stuff like that, where like I need to be focused until I kind of feel comfortable on that I've gotten my sea legs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's how the Bethesda open world usually works. They'll point you at an obvious landmark, but as you know, if you've played before and you're confident, you can just go wherever, which is nice.
Yeah, you could just You could just run. As go wherever you see fit. I was thinking about, are there examples? I guess you don't replay games a ton, do you?
Not a whole bunch. Yeah. I mean, I barely have enough time to play new games for review in the week.
Sure. There are certain games where I kind of dread restarting them because I know the tutorial is going to be a bit of a slog, and that stuff like Mario Sunshine, like sort of that opening and then having to fight the first Piranha Plant boss and then getting arrested. And then like, it isn't until like the Isle Delfino kind of starts opening up and you're able to play at your own pace that I start enjoying that game. A very similar thing to Phantom Pain. Which, it's funny, Phantom Pain's interesting because it almost feels like its mechanical tutorial was Ground Zeroes. Hmm. Like Ground Zeroes was very much a, here's a playground, go get acclimated with these new systems. Whereas Phantom Pain's is that like almost 90-minute railroaded, like, you know, crawling through the hospital as Snake as he wakes up and not knowing what's going on. And the hospital's, you know, under attack and everything. And that's one where I'm like, man, replaying this is going to be kind of a drag.
You know, I'm kind of the opposite. I kind of like playing through tutorial sections at the start. In fact, I've played through the Half-Life Hazard course just for fun more than once, several times.
I'm gratified
to see Black Mesa had a version of it made for itself.
And I'm sure you're not the only one, because another example that sticks in mind for me that I'm sure was inspired by Hazard course was the Titanfall 2 sort of like obstacle course.
Yeah.
That teaches you about wall running and double jumping and kind of maintaining your momentum. And that's something that has become like a speedrunning course in and of itself. Like,
I think what it is when you play video games, you're in pursuit of like victories, of course. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to, you know, that sort of thing, it's like the quickest way to get a high. Immediately do something and immediately get praised for doing it right. That's why I used to like playing Cooking Mama back in the day. You do one incredibly easy thing right, and the game just showers you with praise. And it's not like a huge high. It's like sniffing glue, but it's an easy high.
Yeah.
And, you know, therefore can be quite attractive.
Yeah, yeah. But there's also the tutorials that stick with me over time. Like the tutorials that, like you said, the ones you want to revisit, like Hazard Course. But Resident Evil 4 for me is...
Yeah. I think the Deus Ex training course needs more love, because it takes the opportunity to do a lot of world building while it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you end up like confronting one of the main, have a little conversation with one of the villains at the end, and they take the time to teach you about the world and your organization and all of that.
Yeah, so it's not just there to teach you the mechanics. It's kind of entrenching you inside that world.
Yeah, so you're ready for the actual opening of the game, which of course is famously like the opening Liberty Island sequence, where is like a sort of capsule of the entire experience. You've got a situation to deal with on this island, and there's multiple ways to approach it. And because you've already like learned the basics, you can jump right into figuring out what approach you're going to take.
And that works for a game where like the rest of the levels are similar to that in terms of that opening mission is a framework that is used throughout the rest of the game. Like, you know, sort of the immersive sim element of we're going to give you a problem you need to solve, but how you solve it is kind of up to you and how you want to play the game and what sort of what mechanics you really want to kind of engage with going through it. I've been really, as I'm watching Casey replay Half-Life 2, I've been really impressed by the ongoing tutorialization of that, where all of them feel hidden and feel woven into the game.
Well, it's necessary if you keep going to bringing out like new mechanics, which Half-Life 2 does.
So that's the thing, is like you can't, at the beginning of the game, they teach you a little bit about the physics with the pick up that can. So the guard, you know, knocks over the can, and then you can choose to pick it up, throw it at the guard, throw it away, whatever. But if they would like teach you about the gravity gun there, that you, and then you don't use it for a few hours, you'd be like, well, why the hell are you teaching me that now? So giving you the gravity gun, letting you play catch with Dog, and then getting to Ravenholm, and almost one of the first things you see is the zombie that's been cut in half by the saw. And so that immediately is like, oh, this is a thing I can do. And then so you start pulling saws off, and that's how you get through a lot of that level.
Do you think Half-Life 2 counts as a game where that starts with you awakening in a sarcophagus?
What is a train to work if not a sarcophagus?
I think, you know, when we say sarcophagus, what we mean is like suspended animation of some kind.
Sure.
Because it's a classic opening because it immediately like puts you in that world as like a total newcomer who has to have everything explained to them. And that works well in context for a lot of games.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, movies do that, like having your avatar be someone who's just as confused as you are and having the same questions that you do. And so you guys learn, you learn information, you know, at the same click, as opposed to some games. Some games that kind of root you into a character going about their everyday life. Sticking with Zelda, in my recent Zelda replay, the game with the worst tutorial I felt was the opening couple hours of Twilight Princess, which really wants to like beat into you that, oh, Link is just a simple small town farmer. And so you're going to herd goats and you're going to, you know, screw around in this garden and in this village. And it takes several hours before like the actual kind of adventure kicks off. And while some of that is tied to the opening, it's, I feel like the two of them speak to each other.
You know, what's a really good clueless twat wakes up in unknown environment game? Soma. Did you ever play Soma?
Oh yeah. That's a great one. Yeah.
I love the opening of that game.
Yeah.
It teaches you all the basics for like figuring out the adventure puzzles. Look, checking through your drawers. Using the computer, going to the like office, and then bam, you're in a undersea base in the future when like 5 seconds ago you were some random twat in contemporary Earth.
Yeah. Now I'm trying to think how many of these sarcophagus.
Well, when you start to think about it, as I say, it's a very like effective opening for a video game that has to teach the player about its world. We've got tons of super chats, and I feel like they're going to drive the conversation a bit.
There's a bunch of games I've been thinking of.
So why don't we go straight there?
Hell yeah.
Starting with Gary Davis with £5, who says, thanks for my new addiction to the Hornblower series and Link to the Past. Any thoughts on Buccaneers! It's an indie pirate RPG on Steam. Not familiar with it, but with the magic of modern technology, I can immediately look for it on this browser window here.
Yeah, I think it came out last year and it's kind of like a cross between Sid Meier's Pirates, but then there's like when you onboard or when you board a enemy ship, it kind of goes into first person and kind of looks like a ugly Sea of Thieves in first person.
It kind of feels like Sea of Thieves crossed with Shadows of Doubt.
Oh, interesting. There you go.
When did that come out? March last year.
I think it was last year. Yeah.
Maybe I'll take a look at some point.
There you go.
Hey, how much did the pirate charge for his corn?
Six pence. 1 pence.
A buccaneer.
Ah, that's really good. I should have got that.
Insecure, welcome to Early Access. Glad you're enjoying the Hornblower series, Gary Davis. I just started on Hornblower in the West Indies in my current read-through of the series, which is one of the ones towards the end.
Is it a single story, or are they all just kind of their own adventures that you can read in any order?
Well, they're all in like a constant continuity of the dude's life.
Yeah.
So if you were asking me, like, what's my favorite story to read by itself, I guess I like, which one is it? I think it's The Commodore that ends with him. No, it's the one before that, isn't it? That ends with him, like, finally becoming, like, rich and respected by his peers. After he escapes he escapes from Napoleonic France. But yeah, read the books, they're good. But Are You Really? Gave us $5. And that was their first super chat, and they didn't even post any text.
Welcome, but Are You Really?
What a waste.
Oh, wait, there's a text underneath it.
Oh, there you go. Have either of you played Giant Citizen Kabuto? The tutorial for the strategy component was pretty humorous, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on the game, especially retrospectively. Well, that was a game from that Golden Age of Tutorials era I was talking about.
It was.
I didn't specifically remember that one.
I never played this game. I do remember its box art at various Best Buys.
Was that the one with the hot lady on the front?
No, I remember it. I remember a big monster.
Probably doesn't narrow it down.
No, that was also the era of let's just put a hot lady on the front.
Giant Citizen Kabuto cover.
You can also...
This had a hot lady on the front.
Games using humor in their tutorial can be pretty effective as well. Far Cry Blood Dragon used humor in its tutorial when it would try to teach you things, and the main character would like sort of be offended that they were being talked down to. Spider-Man, the original Spider-Man game based on the original Spider-Man movie, had Bruce Campbell narrating.
Yeah, he came back to do the tutorials for the next game as well, and he was
I don't remember that.
Just as much a delight.
Yeah, exactly. Psychonauts obviously does goofs in his tutorials.
Yeah, Portal and Portal 2, obviously.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rob Mace, member for 11 months in Early Access, says, using my member chat to say you're both awesome. Thank you so much, Rob.
That's very sweet of you.
And then Alex Armstrong gives $10 and says, off topic, but I love Yahtzee's prediction powers. Odd stuff like Origami King's hole punch boss, and good stuff like the Freedom Planet devs removing the wait for you to finally agree on something dialogue. Oh, I didn't hear they'd done that. Well, that just goes to show, talking shit about people pays off.
What's the Origami? I remember the Origami King.
Well, you remember Paper Mario, the Origami King, had a couple of boss fights that were had against large stationary objects.
Yeah,
such as a hole punch. Well, in my game for the previous Paper Mario, I posited the idea that since, I think it was Color Splash, that since they were like focusing each game on some aspect of paper crafting, the next game would obviously be about dealing with pieces of paper and the big boss will be a hole punch.
Oh, cute. Look at that.
And I was absolutely right, it turns out.
Nintendo, send this man a check.
_X1A gives $11 Canadian. Sorry, should that have been __X1A? Greetings from my vacation in Hyrule. I took a week off from both my jobs to binge the plot and really live in the world. 50 hours in 3 days and loving Tears of the Kingdom as a Breath of the Wild sequel.
50 hours in 3 days?
Jesus Christ. I've been hearing a lot about people like taking time off work to really devote themselves to it. It's almost like these games always attract a slightly rabid fan base or something.
They're really good. This game's really good. I'm about 25 hours into it.
It hasn't... I'm still like in like the tutorial island and it hasn't massively impressed just yet, but as I say, I'm waiting to see how I'll feel after like 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
Snake in the Garden gives €5. Says, didn't like flash-forward tutorials like in Persona 5 Royal, as then spend game waiting for that scene to occur. Yeah, then you get the weird scenario where you finally get to that point in the game, and then you just play through that whole sequence again, but it's slightly different, and no one really knows why.
Yeah, it's all different because like the persona you have in the tutorial are just like general persona, and then when you get there, you have an entirely different set of persona, and you're at a different level, and so I think it kind of just like relies on you forgetting those details I from suppose. 45 hours ago or whatever.
Yeah. And sometimes you get to that point and they'll just skip ahead and said, yeah, this was the intro part. Moving on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moring 75 gives $5 and goes 07, which we now know is a shorthand for a salute in
people
some
said that,
community or other.
People said that like a year ago. We said the same thing and didn't know what it was and did not learn from it. So,
well I guess we needed a tutorial. We needed an emoji tutorial, apparently.
Exactly.
HJorth87 gives 50 DKK. And says, loved Boot Camp in Opposing Force. It was a game by itself. Put vest on, step into the spot, shotgun blast to the chest. As you can see, you are not dead. You didn't end up playing Opposing Force, did you? The Half-Life expansion.
No, we didn't play that or Blue Shift.
Where you play as a soldier. Because they had it. It had its own hazard course called Boot Camp, which was
okay.
Just you as a soldier undergoing basic training. And it was very, very shouty. And it was very difficult to impress anyone. In contrast to the Half-Life hazard course.
Sure, sure. Was that... So did you play a soldier? Like yes. One of the soldiers who was hunting
yeah, that,
down...
Yeah, Gordon that was the premise. That was the whole premise of Opposing Force. You played one of the soldiers who show up in Half-Life 1. And you
did
see
it, like,
things
humanize
from a different
them?
Perspective.
Were you like, oh, the people I was shooting weren't bad after all. They were just
no,
doing the,
no,
job.
They were bad. You yeah. like your dude in Opposing Force was only good because they never got around to giving him the part of his orders that said murder all the scientists.
Gotcha. That's probably good.
And then it turns out towards the end, you remember like the ninjas in Half-Life 1?
I do, the invisible
ninjas. Well, it turned out the ninjas and the soldiers weren't quite on the same side.
Oh.
Like the soldiers were told murder all the scientists and the Black Ops were told murder all the scientists and the soldiers. Like total like cleanup.
Yeah, yeah. This is classic ninjas. If you bring ninjas into the fold, they're always gonna. They're always
you
gonna
just
go
can't stop them killing things.
No,
you gotta be really sure you want everything dead when you bring the ninjas in because they just can't stop themselves. They're like dogs with food. Alex Armstrong gives $5 and says tutorials should be optional to not alienate experienced players and those who are replaying the game. Not forced every new replay. Sonic Frontiers. Grrr.
Oh no! Yeah, I haven't thought about Sonic Frontiers. Going to be really boring the first couple hours. On a replay.
Yeah, I seem to recall it. They do that loading screen thing where it would like teach you the mechanics, but then it wouldn't tell you you could now stop doing the loading screen tutorial and move on to the rest of the game. So you could just stay there, just constantly repeating the same things
now.
Without realizing you're supposed to press something else.
This is where I live. I'm signaling out JRPGs just because those are the games that came to mind, but they do tutorials where they'll put like a building in the first town that just has a bunch of people, and when you talk to them, they'll teach you mechanics
yeah,
in the game.
Final
and
Fantasy
you can skip
did that a lot.
Building. Yeah, Final Fantasy did that a lot. Final Fantasy VII has that back in the slums. I think Chrono Trigger has a house like that. Xenogears has one in the opening dungeon or in the opening village, and I like that as a even I think Earthbound. If you could go to the library and like read. Mm. Like the library has a bunch of books that teach you about some of like the more kind of subtle mechanics of the game.
Yeah, but it's hard to
and
internalize
like
the lessons when it just throws a load of text at you.
Yeah, yeah.
Wojtek gives $5. Well, yes, we know how to pronounce that now. And says, always thought Witcher 3's opening area was a good example of a tutorial. My wife doesn't play games, but she was able to get through that quickly. Was that the one where Geralt was teaching Ciri?
Yeah, because I've played that opening tutorial. Yeah, and like hopping between like little posts in the yard, and I think that's one of those games. Speaking kind of about unfolding, is the tutorial is relatively linear, and then like the opening missions are on like a smallish island or something, or a smallish part of the world, and then it kind of really branches off and becomes.
I just remembered another game that had a really good tutorial level: Thief: The Dark Project. Where you were going through like a Garrett's training as a thief. And which was another one that does a really good bit of world building as well. Because at the very end of it, Garrett is like, let go from his training, and says, all right, the rest of your day you spend by yourself. And Garrett's internal narrative says, the keepers were trying to teach me to be one of them, but I found other uses for their skills. And it's not like a cinematic, but at the time he says that, it's perfectly timed. So you get to the end of the corridor and just find an expensive vase sitting on a table.
Yeah.
And if you walk right up to it, the little prompt comes up that says, steal. So immediately you steal it to illustrate Garrett's point.
Yeah.
Kakper Rogalski gives $4.99, says Morrowind had a good tutorial. Short, introduce the main mechanics, then sets you free to figure it out for yourself. Is there any Elder Scrolls game that doesn't start with escaping from a prison?
Or being I just know, obviously, the... Oblivion has you escape. Isn't like Patrick Stewart the king?
Yeah, yeah. Patrick Stewart shows up and escapes through the escape tunnel that's in your cell.
Yeah. And then Skyrim obviously has the much goofed on where you wake up on the cart.
Yeah, you're being taken to be executed. And in Morrowind, you're a prisoner who's been drafted into a quest. Mm-hmm. And that's why you show up at Morrowind.
Okay, so that kind of throws you... That's like a little bit of the in media res.
I don't know how Daggerfall did it. I never played Daggerfall.
A game that threw you into the deep end, I think in a bad way, was Nier Automata. Because its opening, if you get through it without dying, it's a cool opening. But if I'm not mistaken, its opening, if you die once, you need to restart at the beginning. And it's not like capital E easy.
Yeah, I seem to recall it being confusing.
Yeah, there's like a half hour, 40-minute opening that like you can very easily die and then have to restart. And you're like, what are you, like, this is, you are actively keeping me away from wanting to enjoy this game. I do love the game, though.
Yeah, it needs to grow on you, that game.
Yeah.
Archie McGeoch, however you say that, gives $2 and says, Minecraft, no tutorial or eternal tutorial. I think it does have a tutorial. I think for the longest time it didn't have one, but they added one in one of its many updates, I seem to recall.
Minecraft got me thinking about Fortnite and PUBG. And if I'm not mistaken, both of those games, when you make an account and play your first match, they load it with super easy bots. So you're not playing against human beings. And so you're pretty easily able to get kills and win. And I think part of that is like a psyop to give you that endorphin rush and be like, look, you can win. Now keep playing until you get that feeling again.
Wesley Thomas gives $2.20. Says Fallout 3's tutorial takes 18 years to complete. Well, it doesn't really, does it, Wesley Thomas? It takes like half an hour. You want to talk about long tutorials? Everyone kept telling me to stick with Final Fantasy 13 because it gets really good once you get past the tutorial 20 hours in.
They
used to say.
Yeah. Are you fine with games like tutorial prompts coming up late into a game when they introduce something new? Because people have been goofing that Nick is still getting tutorial prompts in Persona 5 with new mechanics and new things. Like,
well, I think that it depends on the game and how easy the new mechanic is to understand. Because, there's a lot of mechanics you could figure out just as they just, start the game and give you the controller and you just experiment with all the buttons.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of mechanics where it's not obvious. Long jumping in Half-Life, to come back to that.
Yeah.
You can't figure that out just by randomly pressing all the buttons.
No, not at all. With zero spoilers, Tears of the Kingdom does an interesting thing to where the Sky Islands will obviously teach you the main new abilities, like Fuse and Ultra Hand and stuff like that. But random shrines you come across when you get to Hyrule and are just playing the game, they feel less like one-off puzzles and more the shrine teaches me to rethink about the abilities I already have. And I'm like, I didn't think that I could use the time rewind ability in this way. And so I keep coming across random shrines in Hyrule that feel like invisible tutorials to me. And then I'm using that knowledge out in Hyrule just normally to be like, oh, the way I solved that one shrine, I can approach this Bokoblin base like that.
Well, I have already figured out you can repurpose a fan as an outboard motor.
You can?
For a boat. I don't remember the game directly telling me to.
No, it's the game feels very much like a good improv partner. Like it will always say yes and. Like if you have a weird idea, it will generally roll with that idea, which is cool.
All right then.
More on that later.
John Connor gives $550 Canadian and says, throwing you into combat and slowing down time till you press the right button being shown seems the least obstructive. Menus are a crutch. Well, as I say, if it's that sort of game, yeah. Just off the top of my head, Callisto Protocol does that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, to teach you, like, oh, here's how you dodge and here's the timing of when to dodge. Or
I think, you know, the purest example would be Celeste, where you run, like, at the end of a collapsing bridge and jump towards a ledge and you realize you're not quite going to make it, and the game slows down to a crawl and then mm-hmm. tells you what the dash control is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and there's,
oh, okay, we use this.
That's thing. Actually, yeah, Celeste might be the best example of that, because there's also, like, Cuphead has that tutorial stage where it's just signs written in the background of double jump
press,
here and air dash
press
here.
This, press that. Can you figure that out, fuckwit?
Yeah.
Apparently not. In a couple of cases. Dimitri gives $550 Canadian and says, thoughts on tutorial through design. I'm reminded of Mario on the NES. There's a shiny block and an incoming Goomba. Learn to run and jump and never stop. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, Dimitri, but counterpoint, Crusader Kings 3. How would you tutorialize that through that particular method?
Yeah, Mario is able to do it because...
because he can. There are two things he can do. He can run and jump.
Yeah, your
it
controller
doesn't take
has...
long to go down the list of possibilities for what you can do to things.
Yeah, you can tick off every combination of buttons on the controller pretty quickly. You know, that being said, Mario was smart because it was teaching people who had very little ingrained knowledge, which
how
is
many,
something that
how many
we
kills do you think that first Goomba in the first level of Super Mario has won? Has that clocked up over the years? Do you think,
honestly, like probably more than like any Souls boss. More than like Ornstein and Smough, or more than Millennia. So, like, honestly, I have to imagine.
I believe it. Alex Armstrong is $2. Wotsits or Monster Munch, and your preferred flavor? I guess I would more frequently eat Wotsits back in the day, but I prefer pickled onion Monster Munch as a flavor.
Can you describe the two of those to the people who might not know?
Certainly. A Wotsit would basically, you would recognize as a sort of small Cheeto.
Okay.
Complete with Cheeto dust.
Okay.
Monster Munch, I don't think there's much in the US that has an appropriate comparison, because you don't really do so much of in the way of the maize-based snack rather than the potato-based snack.
Maize as in corn, not maize as in, like, getting a labyrinth.
I guess the closest equipment I would think of would be a Funyun. Imagine a Funyun, but it's shaped like a little monster's paw.
I like this. Yeah, and pickled onion is a big flavor.
Yes.
Oh, I could get down with that.
Anyway, moving on. Fill My Ass Up gives 50 Norwegian kroner. And says, is it fair to say that tutorials that show a menu with pop-up boxes explaining things one by one is quite immersion-breaking? You know, I brought this up in a dev diary once. I kind of roll my eyes whenever a game tries to go without a HUD or a GUI, because it feels a bit fussy. Mm-hmm. Like Dead Space and the way it tries to make all its GUI elements in-universe feels a bit needlessly fussy, because when I think back to my favourite games, like Half-Life, I don't remember ever thinking that this game would be so much more immersive if there wasn't an ammo counter in the corner of the screen. Yeah. I don't believe I ever thought that. So I don't think a menu is inherently immersion-breaking. I think a clunky one can be.
I also think a HUD, a good HUD, you stop noticing.
Yeah.
Like when you're playing the game, and like maybe you notice it more as a viewer or something. Like there are certain.
Yeah.
God, what was it? Some game we were. When we were streaming Tears of the Kingdom, Link's weapon, like Jamate fused a really long weapon, and it was kind of just like clipping through the floor. Like it just. Yeah. Wasn't existing with geometry.
Yeah,
and someone in chat was talking about how that's unbearable, and Jamate and I were like, we literally don't even notice that. Like, that is something that, like,
well,
when you're playing the game,
I stuck a boulder on the end of a sword, I was absolutely noticing it clipping into the floor constantly.
Yeah, but, like, it's, for the way I play games and the way Jamate plays games, it was like, this wasn't even a thing that, you know, registered with us.
You know, now that we're talking about it, it's something I noticed over and over again in Jedi Survivor as well. Like, not just the characters, like, hands clipping into walls or chests as he was opening them, but I'd see, like there was, like, a big lever that you had to hit to turn it, and when you turned it, like, it partially clipped into the floor because there was no recess for it to go into. And I'd noticed that, and I think the fact that the game is shooting for, like, the big cock realistic graphics and then sort of lacks attention to detail in that area really highlights the schizophrenic attitude with which these games are made, I suppose.
I don't know. Like, to me, I think this is a very much a personal preference thing, but to me, like, those kind of complaints feel so, like, pedantic.
Well, it just really,
like,
jumped out at me, especially in a game that's, like, shooting for amazing realistic graphics.
Yeah.
The fact that, even just the fact that you turn a lever and there's no recess for the lever to go into, so it just clips into the wall.
Yeah.
You don't, I mean, admittedly, it was quite a big lever.
Sure.
But, and I would think most people would notice that it was clipping into the floor at that point. But if you don't, that's fine, I guess. You're probably one of those people who like turning off all the graphical bells and whistles when they're playing multiplayer shooters so that they don't get in the way.
Yeah.
Anyway, Snake in the Garden gives €5 and says, I bounced off Stardew till watching YouTube tutorials. Then I grasped what I was supposed to do. A lot of life sims seem to expect you to fill in the blanks. I've noticed that, Snake in the Garden. I've noticed a lot of Stardew contemporaries, excuse me, where they just throw you into, like, the village and the farm and just, like, leave you to figure it out.
Yeah.
The way I remember playing Stardew, I remember feeling intimidated when the game said, hey, introduce yourself to every character. I was like, and didn't tell you where any of them were. But then I realized, you know what, let's just assume we'll get to that eventually and focus on what we know right here and now. Plow like a plot of areas, plant your starting seeds, water them day to day, and just hope everything will come together over time. And it did.
Mm-hmm.
For me.
It feels like the smart way to do that kind of stuff is just to layer in elements over time, kind of in the same way like like if you're making a soup, like you're adding ingredients as you're slow cooking it throughout the day, or a stew. You don't need to put everything in at once. You can slowly be adding and eating things in.
Yeah, I guess the issue is Stardew, like, shows you all of it at once, but doesn't sort of establish that, hey, most of this you don't need to worry about right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, oh, fucking chat jumped to the bottom again.
Oh, you monster chat.
I hate when it does that. Chris S., member for 10 months, I think the S must stand for sod off, and says, hate dull long tutorials, barrier to replay, e.g. Ocarina of Time. Yeah, well, we were talking about that.
Yeah, Ocarina of Time still doesn't feel too long to me, whereas Twilight Princess definitely is extremely long. But again, Ocarina of Time was also one of those, like, paradigm-shifting games where it had to teach everyone what it's like to move a character in a 3D space and sort of the origin of Z targeting. And
am I weird in that when I replay a game, I want to replay the entire experience again? Like, I'll very rarely, like, switch up the difficulty even. Like, I'll just play it again on the same difficulty I played it before.
No, I'm a similar way, because I mostly want to see how the game holds up to the current me.
You know,
what I thought of a game either as a kid or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and what I think of now
that I've grown as a person. Or I just want to reminisce in a comfortable place.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, very rarely do I replay a game and I'm like, I'm gonna ramp up the difficulty. Deebs is obsessed with Resident Evil 4 and has been talking about how it's like played through the game and then played it on the crazy difficulty and is now trying to do speed runs and stuff, and that's just like that's something that has never clicked with me.
I mean, only games like I've played over and over and over again, like that's one of my like all-time favorites, like all-time comfort zone games, like Dark Souls, is something I would consider playing as sort of with sort of a wacky self-imposed skill run, like no items or whatever.
Oh yeah, like Jack was doing those kind of Elden Ring runs where he'd almost be role-playing as a specific character, like who only used explosives.
Yeah, I would only do that if I played something over and over again enough times that I was finally bored.
Mm-hmm.
I finally wanted to do something to make it feel fresh again. Centurion Zen gives $10 and says, because I played mostly military games, I hear the word tactical a lot. I've gotten so sick and tired of the overuse of the word tactical that I've replaced it with dry heaves. Well, good for you, Centurion Zen. Yeah, like, what does tactical even mean in a lot of contexts? How does a tactical reload differ from an actual, like, a conventional reload?
Like, reloading a gun?
Yeah, like, I've heard the term tactical reload.
I mean, I think of it as sort of like the active, at least in terms of a game, like the active reload in Gears, which you don't just hit a button. You need to do something while hitting the button. And yeah, that adds an additional layer to it.
I think these days a lot of people just say tactical to mean in the military fashion. Like, tactical gear to refer to just wearing camo and a body vest.
I guess so, yeah.
Anyway, Alex Armstrong is $2 and says, ever wonder how Ho Master and Wally Russ are doing? And those were two recurring commenters on my old Let's Jan Out series that I remember we used to take the piss out of a lot. Because Ho Master, counterintuitively, judging by his name, was constantly asking his advice on how to pick up women.
Mm.
So we took the piss out of him a lot for that. We were saying, oh, yeah. It's like Ho Master needs to go back to university and go over his degree again.
Maybe you'll never make Ho Master get married. That'd be nice.
You'll never be a Ho professor at this rate.
Oh, bachelor.
Gay Bear Bro 2 is a member for 23 months in tip jar. No message, though. Oh, here's one now, actually. Gay Bear Bro 2 then gives $10 and says, honestly, just wanted to hear you'll say my handle out loud. You're welcome, Gay Bear Bro 2.
It's more just, it's kind of hard to say several times fast.
It's no fill my ass up.
Few things are.
Shane Fell gives $14.99 $8 and says, yuts, do you ever play Elite Dangerous anymore? I recently switched from auto dock to manual landing and I'm loving it a lot more. Salute. Yats and Marty from Brisbane. Now I'm going back to bed. I assume you mean Brisbane, Australia, and not Brisbane, California.
Brisbane, California. I'm going to SFO. I'm proud of us for knowing what the salute's all about. So yeah, I think we figured it out. Gonna stick.
And yeah, I mean, not manual landing in one of those space games just feels like missing the point. Mm. Like, we're here to like test our skills as a pilot. If they do it for you, why not just do the rest of the game for you as well?
Yeah.
Alex Armstrong gives $5 and says, also like the kind of tutorials that mess with you at times, kind of like what you did with Poacher Yards, except it also became the hidden final boss.
What's that all about?
Well, I made sort of a Metroidvania game with shooting mechanics called Poacher, where you were a dude with a shotgun. And the tutorial room was just like a room where you walk across a field with lots of hopping bunny rabbits, with lots of signs indicating what button to press to shoot the bunny rabbits to make them explode in piles of jibs.
Okay.
And then to unlock the hidden final boss of the game, you have to have done nothing morally questionable throughout the entire course of the game. The intention was that you'd only find this boss on like a second playthrough, because it was super hard bonus boss.
Yeah, so obviously, no one's first thought would be to ignore the tutorial.
You have to go through the tutorial not killing any bunnies. Because there's sort of like a nightmare dream sequence late in the game where you get attacked by exactly as many bunnies as you murdered in the tutorial.
Are there, were you inspired by anything? Like, are there subversive tutorials like that?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Nothing really springs to mind. My main inspiration for that game was Cave Story and how you have to go through some weird hoops to unlock the secret final boss. But not that specific element. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm just that clever. I came up with the tutorial deliberately wrong-footing the player in order to lock off the secret final boss on a first playthrough in a totally organic way.
And I think that works I'm assuming the game was relatively short.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, it was solo developed, so...
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly Symphony of the Night.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was probably, like, fairly big for an indie game. It was a full-on Metroidvania.
Yeah, no, I was... With Link, I was mostly thinking of, like... I feel like I'd be more apt to be like, oh, I want to go back and replay it to try to get this thing if it was a relatively confined game. Not if it was, like, a 50-hour, you know? game. At that point, I'll just look up the ending on YouTube.
Okay. _score_X1A gives another $550 and says, Yahtzee, I did in fact say __score_score_X1A's name right. Marty, what a world we live in.
I was amazed by it.
Well, thank you for scripting our unscripted podcast for us.
Or is it scripted? Are we crossing the WGA picket line right now?
You'll
Are
never know. Hunter Roach gives $10. Yeah, I was thinking about that. Are we supposed to be, like, not producing web content in solidarity with the Writers Guild?
I don't believe so, no. I believe it is only
thank
for...
Christ for that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone considers web content writers to be scabs.
And isn't that, in many ways, an indictment of the way the writing industry generally looks down upon online writers? Hunter Roach gives $10 and says, it's already been said, but Portal, to a lesser extent, Portal 2 had the best tutorials I've seen in a game. Also, here's $10 for Dark Souls 2. Or whatever it is. Oh, yeah. That's the new goal, isn't it? We're going to get Nick to play Dark Souls 2.
Yeah, it's his only modern FromSoft game that he hasn't played through. So we completely funded Jesse playing some Zelda games, which we're figuring out the timing on. And the next planned for the summer will be Nick playing through Dark Souls 2.
Well, if he's through Persona 5 by then, which he probably won't be.
Probably won't be, if I'm being honest, no.
Yeah, it's a bit of the black sheep of the family, old Dark Souls 2. It'll be interesting to see how he feels about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, Jim Matchett gives $5, says Fallout New Vegas still has one of the best tutorials, quest to protect or enslave the town, showing off all the mechanics, or you can skip it entirely. Yeah, it's one of those Bethesda games where you can just piss off.
Yeah, which is great. I'm sure that makes it great for subsequent replays.
Although, as I recall, if you try to head directly to New Vegas, you just get creamed by high-level enemies because you had to sort of do a bit of a long way around the houses.
Like roundabout,
to build your character up a bit. Witticism gives $5 and says, are practice arenas a tutorial for combo practice in Spectacle Fighters and the like? Also, do you find yourself using those very often? I don't. I think it's only a tutorial if you're actually being tutored, Witticism, as in a thing is saying, press this button to do this thing now.
Yeah, fighting games really have those generally, where you can select, like, if you want, like, the basics, advanced, or, like, pro-level sort of courses that teach you all the different variations of things you can do in Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, anything like that.
Cad Monolima gives $5 and says, yep, Mir killed me that way. Frickin' sore arms.
Yeah, having to replay that whole thing seems like just such a... I just don't know why I didn't put checkpoints throughout it, and if you die, you just restart whatever section you were on. That I have no idea why that's the reason. Very dumb.
Aitor Uribari gives 450 arses. Goodness, where would I put them all? And says, hey guys... Sadly, I can't catch this live, so I apologize for going off topic. But if I may suggest a future topic, I'd love to see you discuss the most interesting physics systems in games. Love you guys. This is something that came up in my most recent Extra Punctuation, isn't it? Which is going live to everyone this week, I believe.
This week. Mm-hmm.
I was talking about how games are fixated on making realistic graphics, but if it's just about showing off the processors, why haven't we seen more attempts at fully realistic physics? Especially with regards to things like water and stuff like that. And now that I've said that, Tears of the Kingdom is taking some interesting, doing some interesting physics stuff. And notice how it didn't feel like it needed to kill itself to have ultra-realistic graphics as well.
Nope.
But then
it can only do what the Switch allowed it to do.
Yeah, not that it could have done, could it? Because the Switch's getting on a bit.
It's getting creaky.
Knob. Gives $9.99 and says, a bit off topic, but I've wanted to ask, have either of you ever played the fan translation of Mother 3? Earthbound comes up a fair amount here, and Mother 3 definitely perfects the quirky RPG IMO. You know, I never got around to playing through Mother 3.
I did. I really like it. I don't like it quite as much as Earthbound, but I think it's great. And I highly recommend it to anyone who's a fan of Earthbound.
More, yeah. We're dealing with much more universal themes, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Mother 3 does have some like incredibly emotional moments, like far and away the most emotional game for the Game Boy Advance of all things.
I don't know. When you finally unlock the whole song in Earthbound.
That is really good. Yeah. And then you're thinking of your mom and, you know. It's good. I recommend Mother 3 to anyone out there who likes Earthbound. The fan translation is really good. Really easy to play. You can play it on any device. Let's go steal it.
And you can quote me on that.
Am I back?
Daniel TH gives $20 and says, "Hey, y'all, I just graduated recently, so I feel extra generous today. Have a wonderful day while I figure out what to do with my life." Well, good luck with that, Daniel TH. Thank you for the dosh.
Am I back? Do I live?
I guess.
Can you hear me? I like disappeared for a while.
I can hear you.
Oh, did I ever disappear at all?
Not from my perspective.
What the hell? I just stopped hearing you.
Oh.
Okay. Very confusing. Hello. Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
I don't know what's happening. I don't trust my internet at all.
I was whistling the Earthbound song. Maybe, like, my mic refused to pick it up.
Oh, maybe that's it. And then I got all worried because my internet died in a meeting earlier today, and I was all worried about this. This is incredible. Well, anyway. This is very strange.
Artemis gives $10, says, "Just got here, so sorry if this was already asked, but what are your thoughts on instruction booklets? I kind of miss just being able to read how the game works." I don't really miss them, to be honest with you, Artemis.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do that because there wasn't enough memory available to tutorialize the mechanics in-game, as it were.
Yeah. Or games didn't have an in-game map, and so it was like, here's a map in the little booklet that you can do.
And now they can, so... Thank you for your service, instruction booklets. But yeah. Now we must preserve the trees.
Hey, we still have things like Tunic that carry the torch of the spirit of instruction booklets and weave it into the actual
exactly.
gameplay.
They evoke instruction booklets nostalgically because that's the only place where instruction booklets make sense now in the world of nostalgia.
I think that's you talked about a few weeks ago about loading screens. I talked about changing discs. I think those are things that are going to be very neat to people who experienced them at the time, but I completely understand why they don't exist anymore.
Hmm. Alex Armstrong gives $5, says, "Speaking of Sonic, they used to get tutorials right in the old 3D games with that rainbow question mark off to the side. You could touch it any time." Okay.
I always want to talk about Sonic.
I'd rather not talk about Sonic.
Oh, did we skip Cade Brockhausen's? Cade Brockhausen been a member for 10 months. Sorry about that, Cade. 10 months in early accessing Outer Wilds, the Time Loop one, has a good tutorial.
Yes, I did.
Time Loop games are able to do neat things with tutorials in that they can make your first loop the tutorial itself. You can kind of learn the rules.
It's got the room to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then in Outer Wilds, you finish the tutorial, go up into space, and the universe explodes.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that was worth it.
Yeah, but now I can do what took me 10 minutes in the tutorial in 20 seconds. You know, same thing, like Majora's Mask does a similar thing, and yeah, neat.
Cornish Cream Tea 07, or salute, maybe. Well, I salute the Cornish Cream Tea. Gives £2 and says, "Thoughts on the mansion tutorial in Tomb Raider?" Yeah. Oh, I remember that. I remember it ended slightly panderingly with Lara Croft jumping fully clothed into a pool to teach you how to swim. And then when you get out of the pool, she says, "Well, I'd better get out of these wet things."
Of course.
And then it fades to black. What a tease.
For all the horn dogs out there playing Tomb Raider.
Lara Croft fully voice acted, teaching you how to do mechanics and stuff.
And that was a neat thing, like... a lot of games then didn't have sort of like a safe space that the character lived in for you to kind of wander around. This was like before the rise of the walking simulator. And
it was a different era then where you could like be playing as a character in their massive fucking house with dripping with their massive amounts of fucking wealth. And they could still come across as a sympathetic character or be presented as such.
Yeah. Whereas if you did that now, you'd be like, oh, just hang the rich, eat them.
all the like the modern Tomb Raider games sort of gloss over the fact that Lara Croft is super, super rich.
Yeah.
As much as possible.
Tax the crops.
Hannibal Lar gives $2. Says $2 for Nick to play Dark Souls 2 as Douglas Upperty. Well, that would reference would be lost on a lot of people, Hannibal Lar. Because I played Dark Souls 2. I played Dark Souls 2 back in Let's Drown Out, and we played a character called Douglas Upperty.
I had to Google it, and then, yes, your name came up.
There you go.
What was Douglas Upperty's deal?
He had pink hair and a green moustache, because we were taking the piss. And we decided he was a bath mat salesman.
It's a very specific thing to sell.
Yeah. Well, people need them. Always need a bath mat.
That's true. Also a good point.
B.S. Marsh gives $2 and says $2 for Nick Kerskin frustration playing Dark Souls 2. He got through Sekiro, all right. Dark Souls 2 would probably be a lovely holiday after that.
Yeah, exactly. I believe in Nick. Nick
it's
is
full
very
of
good.
Really weirdly easy bosses. Like the old...
Then you get to the DLC, and then the DLC gets very mean.
Oh, yes. There's some very mean DLC bosses. Yep. But 'twas ever thus for mm-hmm. From Software games.
Oh, yeah.
Like Dark Souls 1's DLC... throws Calamite and the fucking
oh yeah
Manus Father of the Abyss at you.
Yeah, now I'm just worried about what's this Elden Ring DLC.
Oh god, yeah.
I'll let Jack play that.
It's almost the obligation now. The DLC's for the players who've gone, right, we've solved all your tricks, what do you got now, bitch?
We need an easy FromSoft needs to make an easy baby game. Armored Core should just be an easy baby game where all the robots explode when you shoot them with a couple bullets. You
should make a Dark Souls where everyone's a Care Bear.
That'd be nice. Lego or Dark Souls.
Do it like Super 3D Noah's Ark, where you're not killing things, you're just firing food into their mouth. And instead of hitting them, you're like smacking their mouth with a baguette so that they can take bites of it.
What was that game, Fashion Police Squad, last year, where you're shooting outfits at people?
That would work in Dark Souls, because, you know, Fashion Souls is such a big thing.
Yeah. Think about From Software.
Oh, someone didn't coordinate their chainmail and their cape. Soon fix that. Kamja Ninja gives $5 and says, don't know if mentioned, but the way that the Left 4 Dead opening cinematic doubles as tutorial of key game mechanics and special enemies was subtle genius. I wouldn't say I'd call that a tutorial, Kamja Ninja. Because I think for it to be a video game tutorial... the player has to be doing stuff to show that they've learned things. In my book.
I don't even remember the Left 4 Dead tutorial.
Well, they didn't. That's what he's saying. He's like, the opening intro cinematic was like teaching the mechanics.
Oh, gotcha. The video was like, these are things you could do in the game.
Yeah, I don't buy that, Kamja Ninja. I don't remember it indicating what key to press to use your bottle of pills.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's the end of the Super Chats. God, unceremoniously, just sort of stops after that.
Da, 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 da. I was proud of everyone. Everyone, you did very well today.
You all did a passable job. Yeah, we're up to 12.54%, which I guess some people would think was acceptable.
That's incredible. That's half of a quarter. That's an eighth.
Yeah. So I'm just calculating. Yes.
Snake in the Garden with a €2 donation. Where are Care Bear games? Is kindness not cool? Do kids care about Care Bears anymore? Like, do your kids know what Care Bears are?
No. Although they know what Mickey Mouse is, and that's an even older thing.
Yeah, but the Mickey Mouse has like kind of withstood the test of time, right? He's like an institution.
Well, maybe there's not specific Care Bear games, but there's certainly kiddie games. Amy and Frost were playing one the other day. They were playing
Freddy Fish and Putt-Putt.
Yeah, I'm the Putt-Putt. My wife made my eldest play through Putt-Putt fairly recently.
Was that like a punishment?
No, because that was like her favorite game growing up.
Those were like early examples of sort of like adventure games for kids at the time. Yeah, there was also a Muppet Treasure Island game. Speaking of, I know you like your nautical games. Did you ever play the Muppets Treasure Island point
and click adventure? Can't say I did.
It was great. A lot of Tim Curry.
Well, that's always good.
It's wonderful.
Is he still alive?
Yeah.
Did you have to check?
I said that confidently. No, I'm pretty sure he's still alive.
I know he's been sort of ill lately. Yeah. There was like a picture
he's
of him
alive. Oh, yeah, he's like in a wheelchair.
Yeah, he's wheelchair bound now, I think.
Yeah, but yes, he is still alive.
Okay. Well, I guess that'll be it from us. From Slightly Something Else.
Or is it?
Playing with Toffee's ears. He loves it.
This is a good time to read the Dr. Zebra super chat.
Dr. Zebra says, heart, 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 Toffee, heart, heart, heart. Yes, here he is. Here's what you all came here to see.
Here's my adorable jacket dog.
The
Zelda power fuse to fuse Toffee with another object. What would you fuse?
My face. I would fuse him to my face. Then we wouldn't have to bring him out for Toffee time. He'd just be here all the time anyway.
And Wesley Thomas with $220 Canadian. Thank you so much. I used to love Muppet Treasure Island as a sprout. Oh, I like the term as a sprout.
Sorry, I've just got this dog glued to my face.
That's called the fusibility, yeah. Done bun can't be undone.
Well, I guess, what have we else got coming up this week? I got my usual zero punctuation on Wednesday, which will be on the subject of Redfall. Now everyone's stopped talking about that to talk about Zelda instead.
Were you pro?
Pro Redfall?
I guess we'll wait. Yeah, we'll wait. I don't want
to
spoil it.
Well, I suspect you might already know the answer to that question.
I think it's pro. I think it's going to be a Shyamalan twist and that you're going to love it.
So my ZP will be out and the post ZP stream will be of that game as well. And then I got an extra punctuation dropping for members on Thursday, and that's it for me this week, I think. What else is there to watch on The Escapist?
Later today, 6 p.m. Central, Casey and Jesse are back. Hidden Gems, a game called Severed Steel. Hmm. I don't know what it is. Called Severed Steel.
I assume it's about some steel that's been severed.
Someone severed the steel. How could they? Fused to put it back together.
That must have taken a lot of work. Wait, you think they use jet fuel to sever the steel beams?
Oh, no. Jet fuel can't sever steel beams. Beautiful. And then we should have most of the regular streams this week. We'll have a recap tomorrow with the editor's backlog afterwards.
And Snake in the Garden would like to remind us that Adventure is Nigh SideQuest Season 2 finale is this weekend,
for members, at least.
Will have to wait another week.
Yeah, members will get to see how the events of this side quest may impact the events of the much-anticipated Season 3.
Yes, not sure exactly when that'll be out, but editing will definitely be starting pretty soon.
It'll be out sooner rather than later.
If it hasn't already started. Alright then.
Yeah, then check out all of our normal streams. Thank you to everyone all the members, everyone in the Patreon. Thank you so much to everyone who donated through Super Chats. I appreciate it.
Alright then. Bye everyone. See you next time. Bye.